Welcome to the We Are Libertarians Daily Podcast. I am your host, Hody Johns. I'm here with your other host, Sarah Brady Wagner. Sarah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing great. You getting getting everything squared away over there with the for those who are watching on video, which you can do for us, by the way.
My camera fell there for a second.
Oh yeah, no problem. We're actually one of the few daily podcasts where you actually get video of our talking heads. Because we're pretty. I guess that's what they decided, right? So that's...
I think it's no small mistake that we had to make sure that it happened once I came on board.
Yeah, absolutely. Suddenly things had to get a little bit visual. I'm sure for the Creepertarians, we have to throw them a bone. They're such a big part of the Libertarian Party, right?
Oh, let's not talk about them too much.
Okay.
So, well, what are we going over today, Mr. Hody?
Ballot initiatives. And we're going to talk about how they did in different states. I think some wins, some losses as far as Libertarians goes, as well as some, what they call them, poker, like a push, you know, where you just kind of say, this is kind of even. And so, yeah, we're just going to go through some of the big ones. Again, I'll have a complete list of what we're looking over on the show notes, but just some of the major ones, or more importantly, the ones that we feel like talking about, because I guess a matter of importance is going to be up to everybody's opinion. Is there one you want to start on, Sarah?
Well, there were a number of, I know a topic that's fairly popular with our listeners is and libertarians in general, is there were a good number of marijuana initiatives on the ballot in a few different states.
Yep.
In a couple of states, it looked like they had a couple of different versions even.
Yes. I'm here out here in Utah. And so we had one for specifically medical marijuana. So we're not on the recreational train yet. In fact,
we're not quite there.
We're probably a little bit far from it. We actually passed the medical marijuana by 54%. Very contentious in our state. It's obviously being Utah. There's some worry there. The funny thing is the opponent said, well, it's already legal to get, you know, cannabis oil and you know, the medical
CBD
prescription. Yeah, CBD, medical prescription for marijuana. But you're not allowed to sell it here. So it's like, well, what good does that prescription do then if I'm allowed to have it, but nobody's allowed to sell it to me? So finally, some places are going to be allowed to sell it. Obviously, state run or heavily mandated places, which as libertarians we're still not a big fan of, but at least it's a step in the right direction for us. Almost all of the people voting against that were just worried it was going to become recreational. So unfortunately, I know that if it were a recreational bill, there is no way we would have considered it, but we'll take a win out here in Utah as far as weed goes. Other states looking at it were, let's see, in North Dakota, they actually slammed down recreational marijuana.
Missouri had three different proposals to vote on. They had two of different constitutional amendments, one which was for medical marijuana and veteran healthcare services. That one passed. The one that did not pass was medical marijuana and biomedical research and drug development institute initiative. And there was also a proposal C, which included education, drug treatment, and public safety in addition to the veterans health care and medical marijuana. But I found it interesting that in that state, it was much easier to address the topic from a veterans perspective. You know, we have a lot of research now showing how effective medical marijuana is in treating PTSD, or at least in helping people to cope with the symptoms. And that's a winning topic amongst voters, it looks like.
Well, that goes one step further. That's very insightful, because that helps us to say, if we're going to market this in other states, perhaps Utah in the future, to say, let's look at it from the standpoint of, you know, veterans' perspective. I think my biggest thing with marijuana is it's so much better than an opioid. And this goes for all, like, as far as the legalize all drugs thing that libertarians are fans of, which is starting to get some traction. I think I just hate the concept of punishing good people when we try to crack down on bad people. Because I get that some people, if you can call them bad people, but some people are going to abuse drugs no matter what we do. And we try, we create a black market for it, we create a cartel for it. And we make it more expensive for good people to get a hold of their drugs, as well as more inconvenient. You know, even out here in Utah, the rhetoric, I didn't like the rhetoric, even though it passed, because it was always like, don't worry, we'll force them to go to a hospital every month. We'll force them to pay these extra markups. We'll force them to pay these extra things. So don't worry.
We'll add a whole bunch of levels of coercion and force in order to allow people to have this freedom that we think would probably help.
Yeah. Yeah, this stuff that we thought would you know, I mean, it makes it more palatable for people. And granted, I wanted it to pass. So obviously, we do what we have to do as far as tactics go. But at some point, the rhetoric needs to get to the point where we say, you know what, good people should just be able to buy this and grow it themselves if they want it. Well, they should just be able to pick it up at the store and not worry, not have to inconvenience themselves because they're so worried about bad people getting a hold of it.
Right. But, you know, I think it's a good example of baby steps, as opposed to Michigan is a great example of a more radical perspective where they actually passed a complete legalization initiative. So they didn't go one step and then another. They just went ahead and legalized across the board. The other state that looked at it was also Oklahoma. And for them, they approved a medical marijuana legalization.
There you go. So we're moving in a libertarian direction on all those. Those actually were the last two states on my list that I had to get a hold of there. One that's always popular between you and I, because we've talked about it pretty frequently, and always get a lot of feedback from our listeners about this one way or the other, is felons' rights. And in this case, voting rights. It was on a few different ballots. Florida being the one that I saw that was quite notable, to say that criminals could have their voting rights restored to them. Now, I'm sure they could hear it on one of our other episodes, but why is this such an important thing, Sarah?
Well, so in addition to all of the just disparities in our criminal justice system that we already know about and are difficult to address kind of retroactively, felon disenfranchisement is it's a vestige of slavery. And in the most basic sense, it's not good for reintroducing people who have been convicted of committing crimes into society. So the Florida initiative very simply allows felons to have their voting rights restored once their sentences are served. That still leaves one state, which is Virginia, which will still require you to go and get your voting rights restored independently through the governor. But, you know, it's a big deal. It restores over, I lost the number. Do you have the number of how many felons will have their voting rights restored under this law?
No, but it's not a small amount. It was because
one day it was over. No.
Yeah, it's a lot. And now I think here's the thing: is opponents use that number and say, "Well, look at all these felons that are going to get their rights restored." And then
there's an interesting myth that comes up with that, which is, "Well, this is just a Democratic push because all of these voters are going to vote Democratic." But you know, in states that do have felon reenfranchisement laws, that's really not the case. You know, you might assume that they would go to the Democratic Party for, I don't really understand what reason, because both parties are not particularly friendly to convict rights.
Yep.
But, what it does is it gives people a step to become more involved in their communities and in civic life. It gives people their voice back.
And this is very, and I think the Republicans and Democrats are going to try to claim victory or foolery one way or the other. But 1.4 million get their voting rights restored. But this is something that I think is uniquely a victory for libertarian, more so than the other two parties, because libertarians, we frequently have these victimless crime problems, victimless, you know, that create felons, right? Over 80% of felons are part of victimless crime. And so I think more so than Republican or Democrat, and don't get me wrong, they could end up voting Republican or Democrat, but these are people who have already violated the state and are irritated that they violated the state. And so these are definitely potential libertarian voters. You know, they've had the personal experience of saying the state is discriminating against me for hurting nobody. and I'm upset, and we want them in a voting booth if we can as libertarians.
Well, I've always thought it was interesting that the people who you know, are often prevented from having a say in how the government force is used are those people who have actually experienced it themselves.
Right. And one more thing, just because I know it's going to come up with somebody, is there is a limit to what people can vote on. They're not going to vote to make robbing places legal. I think that's the right worry a lot of time, when they're going to vote to do something bad and make it legal because we've restored their voting rights.
Not only that, but I mean, you have to just look at statistics at that point. Is that if the majority of your population wants to make is of a criminal enough mind that they want to make, you know, robbery and murder legal, you know, I think you have much deeper cultural issues than whether or not you're allowing felons to have their voting rights.
Right. You made the point earlier that we have to look at our state constitutions. And I think that that's something that we do have to look at, because some things can get, I mean, they could potentially get enough signatures to put up an initiative, but it'll get thrown out in the courts. So there is some limitation there. One of the ones that I actually wanted to look at next was some of these tax laws. There's a millionaire tax in Massachusetts that made it to the ballot, but it was already ruled unconstitutional at the state level. And so it didn't survive. It made it to the ballot. You could vote yes to pass it or no to pass it, but it was never going to pass because they put something unconstitutional on it, and therefore then it got defeated. You know, we actually have this. There's always a post wave of legislation that comes after these ballot initiatives, because both in the judicial part to say, well, we put it up there, but was it legal? California had that with the when they banned homosexual marriage, had it almost immediately overturned at the state level, and then overturned at the federal level when they tried to ban it by saying, well, we hear you. I understand you put this forward, but that's not going to fly here. So the legislation and judicial system now. There's going to be some libertarian concern there by saying, like, well, if the legislators can just override the people, isn't that frightening? I think more importantly, it's the Constitution saying you can't. And this is what protects us from mob rule, right? The 51% right. Eating 49%.
Right. Well, you know, let's talk there. I know on taxes, there were a slew of different constitutional amendments and measures to limit taxes. But before we get to those, I just want to touch on one other constitutional amendment in Louisiana that requires now a unanimous jury for convictions of crimes, of felonies, because that wasn't a requirement in Louisiana before.
And that could be the single biggest, I think, as far as the national perception goes, that was probably the biggest ballot initiative in any state. And because of Jim Crow legislation, Jim Crow makes it sound racist, and I guess you can argue about how racist it is because it doesn't have race in the specifics of the legislation. However, the bill, what they finally stopped doing, and I did not know this, but it explains their huge incarceration rate down there, is you only needed for a criminal case, you only needed a majority.
You needed 10 out of 12.
10 out of 12 to convict, as opposed to needing it unanimous. So why is that Jim Crow legislation? Give us some of that, because I know this is one of the things that you're passionate about. What is either the history there, or why is it important that this has changed?
So when we refer to things as Jim Crow legislation, you know, I know it kind of causes a little bit of feelings around that, but it really, the reason it seems like it has to do with racism is because it kind of does. That's the origin of Jim Crow laws. Jim Crow laws were created after slavery was abolished, after, black people were given full rights of citizenship, but in the South, there were a number of legislatures that when they rewrote their state constitutions after the Civil Rights era, especially, they did so with a specific intention to write in laws that were not explicitly racial, but that would allow them to control and keep entire classes of people, particularly Black people, still in the same roles socially. So another thing that kind of dovetails with this is most states also allow slave labor legally under the federal constitution and under most state constitutions, as long as it is convict labor. And in Louisiana in particular, the way that this whole system was set up was you just had to get somebody to arrest a black person of a crime. You only had to have 10 out of 12 jurors, which were often all white juries, to convict them of whatever crime you had them arrested of. And then once they are convicted, you can legally lease convict labor for farm work and for things that, frankly, slave labor used to be used for. And over time, we have slowly disassembled these laws and these systems, but this is a perfect example that even in 2018, this kind of last vestige of Jim Crow was still in the Louisiana state constitution to make it easier to give unsavory people and whole classes of individuals, make it easier to strip them of their rights and to literally enslave them in a way that was still okay under the letter of the law.
Right. This 10 out of 12 majority to convict was not done out of trying to keep our streets any safer. There is a financial motive here. And that's why they were protected by the Jim Crow laws, to say, well, you know, we get more people on that system and that's more free labor for us. Louisiana is not the only one who has, when sometimes you read these states, slavery is still legal in a lot of states. Colorado actually had it on the ballot in 2016 and struck down the bill, meaning they kept slavery as a form of punishment. And like you said, it's mostly for prisoners, and which is why it sticks around, because people don't think of prisoners as I wouldn't say people, but they don't think of them as equal participants in society. And so they don't mind punishing them a little harder. I want to be fair to the people who, and we do have listeners that are concerned about felons running rampant. But this is one of those things to say, this just creates more felons.
Yeah, it really depends on if what your goal is to create a safer society and to make it so that, you know, people are able to interact with each other without worrying about those things. This is something that you would want. You want to have a justice system that upholds the actual rule of law, where you do require a unanimous decision. Otherwise, you're creating more felons and you're essentially cheapening what the whole concept means. I mean, once you fill the ranks of what it means to be a felon with nonviolent offenders who are just there because of drug laws, well, then it's really easy for us to consider that felons aren't that bad, because felons are not just people who commit violent crimes against others.
Right. And that's something that I think we as libertarians just need to hammer home, because I think more and more, you know, even I hear the term felon and I'm like, oh my gosh, what did they do? And I find out that literally over 80% of the time it didn't affect anybody except themselves. Yeah. In fairness to Colorado, just to wrap that up, they actually did get rid of the slavery this time, not in 2016, but this time. So you can't be a slave in Colorado anymore. We promised taxes. Now, there's tax, I feel like, in every state, every legislature. So I guess I want to talk like a little more broadly about it. We can talk about some of the specific states and what they were looking at. But think about it applying to, I guess, your state when we talk about it. They had a carbon tax in Washington state that actually was struck down. And this is one of those that I think is hopeful for libertarians. And this is one of the things that I've felt personally for libertarians for a long time. I feel like libertarians are going to win eventually. I know if you've listened to our other podcasts, there's a lot of doom and gloom about how the libertarians did. And yeah, as far as candidates, we did not do as well as we wanted to. But I feel like people have a limit to how much they're going to take. And I think at some point, especially with Washington state, they said, we're having employment problems. We passed this. We're going to have more employment problems. That's our line. We're not going to do it anymore. To say that, you know, because carbon, I mean, you exhale carbon. And ultimately that's there's a tax on number of people you hire. There's also a tax, of course, on pollution. Now pollution is one of those that I think we need to protect ourselves with property rights and say, you don't have the right to pollute my air. But there's an amount of carbon that is not harmful. and especially size and scope. I would also emphasize that the majority of carbon actually doesn't affect the industrial stuff, like the smokestacks that you see. The majority of carbon actually comes from farmland and rural areas. And so this is something that punishes a lot of GDP-based things. It's very expensive. It's very pricey. And so when Washington State looked at it, they looked at the problem they had. I have no doubt in an ordinary election year, Washington State would have approved the measure. But they're having such problems. I mean, we've seen Seattle with the minimum wage and everything with unemployment, that I think finally they said, that's our limit. We're not going to apply this tax anymore. And so I think that that for me provides hope for libertarians, because I think you say, wow, this is, so there is a limit to what people are going to take for their own personal suffering. I guess to help the state, obviously statists don't think about it that way. As far as helping the state, they think about it as doing the right thing, but they say there's only so much suffering I'm going to take before I stop believing that this is the right thing anymore. Haven't we heard enough people trying to do the right thing? I don't know. Is there any tax you wanted to look at?
Well, there were several states who just put forward a straightforward cap on taxes. My state was one of them.
Yes.
We lowered our maximum income tax from 10% down to 7%, which doesn't actually do anything because we're currently at 5.25%. But it limits how much they could go in the future. A couple of other states, Florida passed a permanent cap to 10% on annual non-homestead parcel assessments. That was just actually a cap that was set to expire. They went ahead and decided to continue it.
Good.
And Washington, surprisingly, they decided to prohibit local governments from enacting taxes on groceries.
A lot of grocery taxes on this one, and they were about split. But yeah, Washington actually, again, I think because of the economy situation there, I think that's where their limit was. There was some two educational ones, and this is another one that I think is a positive for libertarians. We spend more of our money in the educational system than any other country in the world by a lot. Now, it's funny because if you look online, you find two sets of numbers. You find how much we're spending on education, and then you find how much like we spend like per student. And per student, we're like fourth, and education, we got like four times what everybody else has. So you can get a little bit nitpicky with the numbers, but ultimately, we pour so much in the system and very little actually on the students themselves, and very little gets to the teachers. So I don't like as a libertarian that it comes off as we hate the teachers. We don't think their salary should increase. Ultimately, the money we pour into there isn't going to the teachers. You know, we don't have the highest paid teachers in the world in spite of the highest paying education system in the world. You know,
right.
We don't spend the most money on our students, even though we pour the most money into it. Huge amounts of concern there. And again, this is a libertarian win in the two states where it popped up, which is Oklahoma. And I'm scrolling, I'm sorry. But anyway, in the two states where they popped up, they were rejected to say, you're not going to spend more. I'm sorry, that's enough. And ultimately, the state will always respond with, guess we're going to have to fire our teachers, when we know for a fact that's not even close to their biggest expense.
Right.
That's not their biggest fat. And I think the voters are finally going to call their bluff on it. Now, there may come a situation where they actually do decide to lay off some teachers, but that's on them. And ultimately, as a voter, you can't enable their reckless spending just because they have the power to do something terrible to people. If we keep enabling their reckless spending, then so it goes. Don't get me wrong. If it came down to a bill which said you have to spend X amount on the teachers, you have to spend X amount on the students, I'd be on board with it. I'm not much of obviously, I believe in the free market. You know, we need to free this up. But in the meantime, that's probably something I would support, is making sure teachers get paid the same amount. But that's never how these bills pop up, because the people that push them forward want their pay cut. And they say, let's increase spending on education. And they cite the teachers in out-of-date textbooks, but it never seems to get there, you know? And so I'm heartened that And I'm sure it's, again, this is not libertarians passing it, but people voting like libertarians, which makes me think that there is some hope for that direction in our country.
Well, not to get you down too much, but yeah. I'm gonna take that enthusiasm away with two minimum wage increases.
Yeah. Yep.
Missouri and Arkansas, which is impressive and actually somewhat surprising, mm-hmm. because those are not generally considered the most progressive states.
Right.
Both decided to raise their income, or so their minimum wage. Missouri raised it to $12, and Arkansas, give me a second to click and I'll tell you how much they raised it to.
Yeah.
But, you know, in both of these states, it will be able to see the impact this has as far as their economy. Oh, let's see, they raised it to $11 an hour.
Okay. And that's over the next, like, several years, right? This tiered thing. Like,
you've got yeah, time. So it's by 2021. So yeah. In a lot of cases, people, you know, try and make it out to be a doom and gloom thing. This is going to be, you know, take immediate impact and mm-hmm. all of these, you know, businesses are going to close. But it is usually done in a progressive way and also usually exempts a lot of small businesses.
But that's on
a state-by-state basis.
And based on the resounding successes they've had in Washington State and California, I'm sure that's what they're looking to when they pass these laws, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm being sarcastic.
Facetious.
Yeah, yeah. Facetious, sarcastic. They have a negative impact on the economy. Now, you and I have talked about the wage system before. We've actually looked at the entire wage system before on payments. And I feel like that's something that needs more sweeping legislation. I feel like when we argue about minimum wage, we're not thinking big enough. There is absolutely an economic system right now that does not benefit workers. But minimum wage laws not only are not the way to do it, they've proven to not be the way to do it. Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell, they've got a really good chapter on this. It's like a 700-page economics book, so I don't expect everybody to read it. But I'm gonna give you a little summation here that anytime we do this with minimum wages, it not only tends to create homelessness, create unemployment, it does it as a rule. And so we've never pulled it off in a way. We always think, well, maybe if we do it slowly, maybe if we grade it a little bit, and all we've done is kind of ease the descent into unemployment as opposed to have the unemployment hit all at once. Let's see here. We're almost out of time, but I did want to get your take on two more surprise votes for me. And this is two states that voted. I'm cutting through a lot of tape here, but saying if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, they will outlaw abortion. And that's Alabama and West Virginia. Both voted for that. Now, that's not what the script of the law actually says, because Roe v. Wade is actually protected by privacy, saying, well, you know, we'd have to invade your home to find out if you're pregnant right. or not. We'd have to regulate all this. I think it's a very appropriate way to, I wouldn't say legalize abortion, but you got to understand, if we illegalize abortion, there is some invasion
what's involved
of privacy.
In that.
Yes, we have to suddenly regulate a lot of things. So what do you take on this by saying if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, we're illegalizing abortion?
Well, in West Virginia, I thought it was interesting the way that West Virginia did it. They just passed a constitutional kind of clarification
okay.
that that you do not have a right to abortion in West Virginia.
Right.
So in theory, the risk of overturning Roe versus Wade is basically just introducing an alternative interpretation. So right now the interpretation is that the state does not have a vested interest in it until the child reaches a viable age, which a lot of the arguments in the courts right now are really just trying to push back what we consider to be a viable age, which medicine is constantly pushing back.
Right.
But so this would basically say that if there was a ruling to give more freedom to the states, to allow the states to decide this, mm-hmm. they're just proactively saying you have no constitutional claim here. But it's not necessarily the same as automatically outlawing it.
Yeah.
So you would have to still go through those extra steps, which is kind of encouraging. But I mean, West Virginia, I have been to several times and don't have a whole lot of faith that they wouldn't do that in a heartbeat.
Sure.
But I mean, that really is, it comes down to, you know, how much you invest in states' rights ideologically. People have more ability to move between states than they do, say, between countries. So there is a little bit more validity to say, well, if you don't like the way your state is, you can leave. I'm not saying that that's a good argument that you should use, but it's a little bit more valid when you're talking about states than it is when you're talking about a country. And one of the things that really makes America work is that we allow different states to embrace different governing ideologies and to test out different things and experiment.
Yeah, I think it's food for thought. And it's something that's worth just debating with your friends. I think, you know, just giving you a little knowledge of what happened on the ballot and something to for our listeners to talk about. Well,
one other thing that I just wanted to mention, and actually I think may be worth an entire episode in and of itself, okay, is in six different states, Marcy's Law, my state was actually one of them, which is a constitutional amendment to add victims' rights to state constitutions. And it was on the ballot in six different states this year. Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Nevada, North Carolina, and Oklahoma. And Kentucky does not have final results yet, but it passed in the other five.
And what does it do again?
So this is, it's actually a somewhat controversial amendment in some states. And one important thing to remember is that it does, the exact wording of the amendment varies a little bit from state to state.
Okay.
But in general, it guarantees that victims of violent crimes have a right to be notified about and present at proceedings, a right to be heard at proceedings that involve release, plea, sentencing, disposition, or parole of the accused.
Okay.
The right to have the safety of the victim and the victim's family considered when making bail or release decisions. The right to be protected from the accused. The right to be notified about release or escape of the accused. The right to refuse an interview or deposition at the request of the accused. And the right to receive restitution from the individual who committed the criminal offense. Now, one thing you might notice about all of these is they're all positive rights.
Yes.
Which it makes them a little bit more contentious among libertarians. But it is also it's a big push that's being put through, actually, by, I believe, a billionaire from California, who his sister was was murdered. And I think he ran into his sister's murderer at the grocery store, not realizing that he'd been out on bail. And this kind of started him down this road of how do victims and victims' families not have any rights when criminals and the accused have all of these rights.
You know, I think overall, I think it's good positive legislation. I think it actually, in some cases, and you say it's contentious among libertarians, and I understand why, because it's more of a minarchist thing as opposed to an anarchist thing.
You were not involved in the argument we had in North Carolina over this.
But I think it does force the state to actually do some things that they don't do now. Those who listen to the Cost episodes are very familiar with, well, we found the criminal to be, not... You know, he's not dangerous enough for us. And right. And so we let him go, and they never interview the victim, who provided no input. We just talked to him and he said it was cool, so we decided it was cool. It forces the state to actually get off their butt and do something. So this is just food for thought. We have to wrap up because Zoom's telling me I have 30 seconds until it cuts us off. So
Sarah, then be sure to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. Go to Patreon. Donate. Tell Chris that you love us. Whatever it is you do. Good talking to you again, Sarah.
Bye.